Welcome to the Sober Rebel Bite Size series for January. This episode is no more than 20 minutes, and there will be one a day throughout the month of January. I've been doing this podcast now for nearly 2 years, and in that time I've spoken to so many amazing guests. So I thought it would be a lovely idea this month to revisit some of the highlights of those conversations every day throughout January to keep you focused on why you're doing this. Today's Bite Size episode is the conversation I had with Jo in July 24. Now Jo talks about how her sobriety has improved her relationships, her health, and how she's now excited about looking forward to the future. We do talk about how to get back into sobriety if this isn't your first time going sober, and also how that voice, that alcohol voice, lies to you. She advises to watch out for fading effect bias, where we forget the truth of the situation and we start to romanticise alcohol.
There was something in me that knew if I could get a day one under my belt, then I would be okay. I know it sounds crazy, but I did. And when I woke up on day two, because I hadn't had a day two for 4 years, maybe, day two was a huge achievement. And it really gave me a spring in my step. I thought, oh my God, I did it. You know, the cans are still at the bottom of my garden and I did not go and cave. So day two, obviously, a little bit better than day one because I've got day one under my belt, but it was still only day two. You know, I'm still looking at my I Am Sober app and it's hours, you know, it's 21 day and something hours or whatever. But I'm thinking, yeah, that's good, Jo. That's good. Keep going. You've got this. Anyway, then I listened to the Alan Carr How to Control Your Alcohol book. Now, I had read this in the past years and years ago when I wanted to control my alcohol because I didn't want to stop. Nobody wants to stop.
Nobody says they want to stop. I didn't want to fully stop.
So I read Alan Carr's book about controlling your alcohol, air quotes there. I got about, I don't know, maybe 3/4 of the way in and I thought, oh my gosh, I've been tricked. This is going to make me stop if I'm not careful. So I put it down. I'm not kidding. That was the first time years ago. So this time I listened to it on audiobook all the way through. And then I listened to it again all the way through. And then I listened to podcasts. I found podcasts. My husband had been listening to them for years about serial killers and all kinds of stuff. And then I found Sober Awkward first, and I listened to that, and it had been stitches, and these two women were just like me, batshit crazy, drank too much, completely get it, and it was so nice to hear people talking about stuff that, yes, oh my God, that is so me, I did that, oh, that's exactly how I felt, and that makes such a difference, doesn't it? You don't feel alone.
Yes. It really does. Because, I mean, it's so isolating, even with friends that drank. I still couldn't talk about it in the same way. It's like, I'm really worried about this. And then you'd have a drink and you think, oh, sod it, I'm not worried anymore.
That's it.
So the times you would open up when you've had a drink, you don't care anyway at that point. It's the next morning. And then you can't ring somebody up and say, by the way, I feel really, you know, I feel really crap now.
Yeah. Oh, want a great night. Yeah, great.
It's interesting, isn't it, really, how you had that really long time of sobriety. And I'm so sorry about your mum.
Oh, thank you.
It's heartbreaking losing somebody. And we're only ever one step away, aren't we? As a drinker, I think it takes an event sometimes for that drinking to become something we think we're in control of or controlling just about to being out of control. And
absolutely.
I know that my drinking ramped up when my dad died.
Yeah, it's hard. It's you don't know what to do. I mean, it's your mum. She's always been there. And then she's not. And you're like, what do I do? Anyway, I've lost people before. I mean, I lost my dad in 2012, but we weren't close like me and my mum, because my mum was a single mum, so she brought me and my sister up on her own. So our relationship was very different. My dad let me down a lot when I was a kid. You know, he'd say he'd come round and he wouldn't, and I'd be sat at the window. It sounds like a sad film, but it's true. It's true. So my mum was my constant. She was my mum and my dad. Don't get me wrong, she didn't do everything perfectly right. And looking back now, after having kids, I think, oh my days, what were you thinking? But we all do our best at the time with what we've got, don't we?
You do.
And yeah, so I loved her very much. And for her to go to the doctors and find out she had a year, well, 6 months, as I said, to live was just, yeah, it completely rocked my world. But I just want to say to anyone out there that is going through something like this, that by drinking, I did not process my grief. I didn't address my grief. So I was stuck. I felt like I was just stuck. I couldn't move forward because I couldn't even scatter the ashes because we weren't allowed to go out. And I don't know. I was stuck, so I just drank through it. If a sad feeling came in, I'd put a sad song on and I would drown my sorrows. But it doesn't drown them, it makes them worse, doesn't
Yeah,
it?
it really does.
Yeah. So it wasn't until I got sober. To be fair, I actually we scattered our ashes on the April the 11th, 23 last year, and I think that made a massive difference to my mental health. There was some kind of closure there after that. So that was the April, and in the June, I was able to stop drinking. So I don't think that's a coincidence that we finally laid her to rest and kind of drew a line under it a bit. And then when I got sober, I could finally grieve for her. I could sit and I could think about her, and I could cry, and I could say, look, you're sad. You've lost someone that's been in your life for 40 years. You know, it's a long time. And yeah, and going through it, feeling the feels. It's not
Yeah.
good, but it is good because it's the only way to feel better and to come through it.
It really is. And it's so important that we do process. And I know that I had similar experiences. My father died 8 years ago, probably 9 years ago now. And yet it was about 4 months into sobriety that it was my birthday, and I had these waves of, oh, I'm so sad he's not here. I'm so sad. And of course, I've always felt that, but it was so real. And I just sat and
Yeah.
really felt it. Honor that feeling. In honoring that feeling, you're honoring that person.
Yeah. And pushing it down, it's only going to come back, but it's going to come back. And how it comes back, how it rears its ugly head as well, you don't know, do you? Will it be drinking? Will it be drugging? Will it be overeating? You don't know. So if you can process it and get it out, obviously I'll always love my mum and I'll always miss my mum, but I don't have to grieve for her for the rest of my life, and she wouldn't want me to.
So that second time then that you came into sobriety, you got your day one, you got your day two.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people imagine that you're going to decide to go sober, you do it, and then to hear that after a year and 3 months was it, that then you kind of like, well, I've given up for over a year now, therefore it's so important that we don't allow its fading effect bias to kind of kick in and tell us that maybe we can moderate now. Maybe we don't have an unhealthy relationship with alcohol.
And it does tell you that, doesn't it? It lies. It
Yeah.
oh, such a lie. And when you look back, you picture yourself in the beer garden with your friends on a sunny day. You're looking fabulous, you know. Oh, it's wonderful. And the truth is, that's not the truth. That is not the truth. The truth is, sat on your sofa, watching Netflix, drinking. Not processing your day, not talking to your partner really, just watching crap on the telly and numbing yourself till it's bedtime.
And forgetting the crap on the telly as well.
Oh my God, the stuff I've had to re-watch.
Oh, I've got whole lists of things that we could rewatch.
Oh, it's horrible, isn't it? Because you're not really there, are you? You're there, but you're not really there.
And that's scary. That's a scary thing. So
Very
well done. So you've celebrated your year. No chance of fading effect bias.
Absolutely not. 100% not. No, never. I would never go back. Why would I go back? There's nothing that it gives me. Honestly, looking back, it gave me a 20-minute buzz, and then the rest of the night I was chasing that buzz, and I never got it back. So for a 20-minute buzz, it was costing me more than a tenner a day, every day. It was making me fat. It was giving me pains in my back. It was affecting my sleep, my relationships, my nail growth. That's something I need to say about. It was affecting everything in my life, and I didn't even realize the things it was affecting until I stopped making it affect them. Does that make sense?
Tell me about the pain in your back, because I had aching in my back. What was yours?
Well, I'd got a job working at a shoe shop, and it was quite strenuous moving all the boxes around and things. And I was used to working from home, and it wasn't strenuous what I did from home. So I put it down to that at first. I thought, it's a lot more of a physical job. But this pain in my back, it would be all the time. And it was kind of like a period pain, but in your back, it was sort of like a tightening. It was just, I don't, it was, I called it tummy ache at the back
So
because
was
I
it
couldn't
like the
just,
kidney area? Are we talking like mid? Because you're pointing to
literally
mid back.
behind your stomach. Yeah.
Not hip, but mid back.
Yeah. Sort of where your dimples are if you have them.
Yeah.
I was concerned because I thought, you've pushed it so long and you've got away with it. This is a bit concerning. So I made an appointment to go to the doctor's. And I told her how much I was drinking, and she booked a blood test to check my liver function. And she rang me, she said it came back. I can't remember exactly what she said, but it came back a little bit out of line or out of the range. So she wanted me to have a scan. So obviously that made me worry a bit. And obviously all my family thought that would be enough for me to go, oh my gosh, I'm never drinking again. No, don't be silly. I was addicted to it, whether I was physically addicted or mentally addicted or emotionally addicted, or I don't know.
But it is an addictive substance. So, like to actually admit to yourself, I know when I talk to people and I'd explain that, cut yourself some slack. It's an addictive substance. And in some way, shape, or form, you are addicted to it.
Absolutely. I did put a post on Facebook actually on my year sobriety, on my normal Facebook for everyone to see.
How did that feel?
I was a bit scared at first. I was like, do I do it? Because there's so much stigma. And I said that I am not ashamed that I got addicted to an addictive substance. I'm not in the minority now. Well, no, I am in the minority still, sadly. But it's moving, isn't it, Louisa?
I think it is. I think the trend is changing. Let's talk about your first thing that you found in sobriety that has changed for you for the better.
Okay. Well, there's three things. They're not in any order, these, because they're all as brilliant as each other. Okay. So the first one I'd say is my relationships with my husband, my children, and more importantly, myself, because I didn't have a relationship with myself. I didn't know myself at all. I think when you start drinking as young as I did, I started drinking at 14. That's the age when you're literally growing and learning who you are, what you like, what you want, what you don't want. And to blare all that out from such a young age, I didn't know that I'd stunted my growth, but I did. I stunted my mental growth, my emotional growth. So when I got sober, it was quite weird because I didn't know what I enjoyed. I didn't have any hobbies. My hobby was drinking. So people, if I applied for a job and it said interests, I'd be like, oh God.
What can I make up?
I can't put drinking and Netflix because that sounds, so you just put something down. I don't know what I put down, make some up, because I didn't have any hobbies. There's nothing that I enjoyed apart from Drinking, going out drinking with my friends, staying in drinking, beer garden drinking, day drinking, night drinking, just drinking because it was what I'd always done. It was ingrained into me that that's what you do. You go out with your friends, you drink. You go out for a meal, you have a meal, and then you drink. And it's just our age group, I think, Louisa.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, we grew up with it, didn't we? It was a hobby. It was a hobby for us. You know, it was a pastime, because that's what a hobby really is, isn't it? It's to pass the time. It's a pastime.
Yes. And it's a waste of time.
If you'd like to listen to the whole episode, then head back to the 23rd of July, 24, with Joe, episode 24. If you'd like to find out more about working with me, then head to my website, louisaevans.com. I don't just support with sobriety, I also help with many other areas, including anxiety, overthinking, and low mood. On the website, you'll find lots of resources, including my online Sober Resilience course, and if you use the code RESILIENCE544 as a Sober Rebel listener, you'll get a 30% discount. And also a range of hypnosis recordings. Use code SOBERREBEL, all one word, to buy one, get one free. Self-hypnosis is a very powerful and effective way to begin to reprogram how we automatically think about things. You'll find a range of different topics on my website. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of my guests on the Sober Rebel podcast for sharing their story and for taking the time to talk to me. The Sober Rebel podcast will be back very soon. I'm just currently recording some fantastic episodes to share with you. I hope you have a good day.